Now, before I start, I wanted to make sure that I give a big shout out to Jeannie Colwin Coaching. Jeannie Colwin is a stress and mind-body coach based out of Los Angeles, and you might remember that she guest hosted the podcast back in January, came on live with me in August of 2021, and then, of course, was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, episode 238. I encourage you to check out all the shows that she's been featured on. Jeannie spent 16 years battling fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, and a myriad of other chronic symptoms that left her both physically and mentally exhausted. She healed herself completely, and now she's obsessed with getting her clients fast results through her one-on-one coaching program. In her program, clients learn how to decrease stress, release stuck negative emotions, and finally heal their chronic pain for good. Visit www.jeanniecolwin.com, that's JeannieKulwin.com, for instant access to her free recorded confidence-boosting breathwork mini-session, or to learn more about her incredible one-on-one coaching program. Welcome back to the Mind and Fitness Podcast. Joining me from across the pond in UK, Southwest UK, located near Bristol, is Phil. I want to make sure I get this right. Delahaye. Is that correct? Phil Delahaye?
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome. Good. Got it correct on my first try. You sent me a message not long ago talking about this concept of internal family systems around TMS recovery. And I had told you that it's interesting that you had said that because Dr. Hanscom, who I've had a couple of times on the podcast, has talked about that being a really pivotal role in chronic pain and recovery. And then him and I just haven't done that interview. So it's great that you had reached out because I'm quite sure that this is a topic of interest for most listeners. So thanks for reaching out.
No, you're welcome. Yeah, it's definitely something I've seen a lot of people talking about in some of the other TMS groups recently. So yeah, I think there's interest in it as a modality. And I know Dr. Schubiner also mentions it in his book. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, we got to that particular element of it as a topic because there had to be some kind of a recovery. And so a lot of this podcast is about recovery stories. And so that's sort of your origin story. So maybe we'll begin there and then we can move on into internal family systems. How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Awesome. Tell us about, what sort of symptoms or issues or chronic pain or what are we dealing with? What are we talking about? What's your background?
So I've had a whole load of symptoms over the years. Like the kind of the most problematic, the one that caused me the most fear and therefore the most focus, was kind of mostly musculoskeletal pain. Okay. So started out with the, the old TMS classic of lower back pain when I was in my 20s and just slowly kind of spread and moved around again, typical TMS presentation, mind body pain. So kind of the lower back pain then sort of spread and I started to get issues with my neck as well and my shoulder. And then sometimes I'd have like sore ankles or a sore knee.
Yeah.
A lot of it was around exercise, like a lot of it was around kind of fitness and activity. And I just thought, why am I getting all these injuries? Like what is it about me that means that I keep injuring myself when other people train and don't seem to injure themselves?
Yeah.
And so it was that kind of classic escalation of symptoms. And like alongside that, over the years, I also had other weird things that came and went. So I had like a round of like unexplained dental infections when I was a teenager, and I used to sometimes get IBS kind of gut pain when I was stressed.
I had
a really bad attack of vertigo several years ago, so there's kind of all sorts of things going on, but it was the back pain and the muscle pain and the joint pain that was the thing that really bothered me.
When you when those things were going on, was there like a connection or a correlation to you that these things were stress-induced or during stressful times? Like, was there any sort of a connection for you at that point in time, or not until later?
At that point in time, not really. But looking back, I can see that a lot of the onset of the pain started like when I was, I'd left university and I was in my first job. So it was that kind of responsibility of like being independent, yeah, being in the workplace. And it was also quite a toxic workplace environment because I was a teacher actually, and the head teacher in the school that I worked in was really quite a toxic bullying kind of person. Yeah. And that then also linked to some kind of past trauma for me about being bullied at school. So in retrospect, I can see why that would have put my nervous system into, you know, into kind of fight flight and all, yeah, this muscle tension and stuff going on. So yeah, for sure. There was definitely a correlation to stress back then, even though I didn't really realize it at the time.
Yeah. 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 So were there, like, was there any, like actual diagnosis along the way? Like when you were seeing physicians, was there any sort of a specific, like, this is what they're pointing to as the problem?
Nothing for a long time, but I didn't really get involved with the GP that often. Mm-hmm. So I would often pay privately, and I spent, as many of us have, you know, a ton of money on chiropractors, like private physical therapists, massage therapists, acupuncture, you know, you name it, I tried it. And yeah, they're not really in the business of diagnosing. I did have an MRI on my lower back at one point, which was normal, nothing unusual to show, which was a good thing, although didn't feel like it at the time. And then later on, when I was having a lot of problems with my shoulders, so like your story about shoulder stuff, like, you know, really resonates for me, because I ended up with a lot of really bad shoulder pain. Yeah, was the thing that got really out of hand about 8 years ago. And at that point, then I did have some scans and x-rays and stuff. And one side, I had a slightly separated shoulder, but only very slightly. And there'd never been an injury. I hadn't fallen on it or anything. So it was one of those things where I was like, well, how did that even happen?
Yeah.
And they couldn't tell me. And then the symptoms then switched to my other shoulder, of course, yeah, when the first one started to get better. And then that other shoulder, I got a diagnosis of bursitis. But again, you know, there was no injury, there was no real explanation for it. And I can now see it was all down to muscle tension.
Yep.
My muscles were just constantly tight and knotted, and, you know, and that my brain was just interpreting that.
How did you eventually get to, you know, because it you had said that in the beginning there wasn't much with the GP, which for those of you in the United States, that is general practitioner. We don't often call it a GP here, which, but I've adopted that term. Just like we don't call physio, because a physical therapist in the United States is a physio everywhere else, seemingly on Earth.
Yeah,
I like the word physio a lot better. So eventually there came a time when you went from going to get MRIs and going to get imaging and things like that to going into like a different path and maybe going a little bit deeper into yourself and mind, body and emotions and things like that. Like, how did you make that transition? Was it a suggestion, or was it did you see a book or a movie or something like that? Like, what kind of brought that into the, you know, in front of you?
So between the kind of diagnoses and then me discovering the mind body approach, there was then also a period where things like escalated even more. And so it kind of went from being isolated injury to just really that kind of like aching all over,
yeah,
feeling really fatigued. I started to get nerve pain. I had muscle weakness sometimes. I'd go to like pick up a heavy pan or the kettle and like my wrist would almost just give out. And I also got some like weird kind of like numbness and tingling and all sorts of stuff. But by that stage, I'd made the connection for myself that it was stress related.
Yeah.
Like, that was just something that I kind of at that point had worked out. And I think I'd come to that more through like the meditation route than anything else. I think I'd like bought an audio book about meditation for pain. And although it wasn't totally the mind body approach, it had elements of it. It had the kind of mindfulness, you know, observing the sensations in your body kind of approach. And I recognized that when I did that, and when I was in a calm, relaxed state, everything felt better.
Yeah.
And that when I was stressed, everything felt worse. So it was at that point, I kind of felt like this isn't physical. This is my obsession and my focus is making it worse. But I still didn't really have all the pieces. And at that stage, I kind of felt if I had gone back to the doctor at that point, I'm pretty sure I would have been diagnosed with fibromyalgia because I had all the symptoms of it. But yeah. I didn't want to know because I didn't want to be told that I had something that was incurable, which is basically what they tell you about yeah. fibro, or they did then. So I think I must have been Googling the right things, and you know, all of that information they harvest on you on the internet actually worked in my favor because I saw an ad for the Curable app on Instagram. And that was the thing, that was the game changer, was that was what introduced me to this whole world of mind body recovery.
What do you think it was about, you know, because advertising is an interesting thing. What do you think about the ad that drew you to, was it because you had already had kind of this realization that, hey, my pain feels differently when I'm in a relaxed state versus a not relaxed state? Or was it something else that drew you to it?
I can't remember what the ad actually said, but I'm guessing it would have been something about, you know, rewiring your brain, or, you know, chronic pain being curable. And that just, I thought, well, that's worth a look. And as soon as I looked at their website and read just a little bit about their approach, it was immediately, straight away, I was like, that absolutely 100% applies to me. Sign yeah. me up, you know, and couldn't wait to find out all about it, really, because it just, it was like the missing piece that I hadn't quite worked out for myself. It was the emotional part was yeah. the bit I hadn't understood. I'd understood the hyperfocus, the hypervigilance. I kind of knew that I was in a pain fear cycle, but I didn't understand why it happened to me in the first place. I didn't understand that there was an emotional element.
What, like approximately what year are we at this point in time?
So I'm trying to think what it would have been, because I'm older than I'd probably sound. So just for context for people listening, I'm 51.
Oh, wow. Yes. I'm not saying that 51 is old, but no, you do not sound, you don't sound, nor do you look 51.
Yeah, I sound and look a lot younger than I am. And that's probably largely to do with the fact that I'm transgender. It's the kind of Peter Pan effect. Yeah. So I was assigned female at birth. And I didn't come out as transgender until I was 45. All of this massive escalation of symptoms happened around that time. So yeah. again, you know, it makes perfect sense. Like I was so stressed yeah. and so anxious, and my whole life was kind of like falling apart, and I had to rebuild it. I had to like change everything yeah. I'd ever known. So no surprises that, you know, I had massive amounts of symptoms then. So that would have been, yeah, so it would have been about 6 or 7 years ago that I had this kind of massive escalation of symptoms, and I discovered the Curable app and Nicole Sachs journal speak and all of that good stuff. That was just over 2 years ago. So it was June in 2020.
Oh, okay.
In the middle of the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting. A lot of people had some escalation of symptoms in that period of time, which I'm sure is not really all that surprising. Now, when you were going through, because I have a little bit of experience with Curable, when it first launched, which was, I think, 2017-ish, I had checked it out, and I don't know, I haven't seen it since probably 2018 or so, but I sort of had the gist of what it was like in 2017 or so when it had first had dropped. What about, like, were there certain, because I know they have like different exercises you can do, and, you know, sometimes there's just lessons where it's more of like a cognitive thing, and then other times there's actually active things to do. Like, what were some of the different parts of the platform that you really found most valuable?
The thing that I really loved most about it was the education part, the lectures, because mm-hmm. that gave me all of the information and the understanding that I needed to yeah. make sense of what was going on for me. And then I also liked some of this brain retraining stuff. So one of the things I did very early on is I stopped talking about my symptoms, and I stopped using the word pain as much as I possibly could.
Yeah.
I just stopped using, I started talking about sensations, but I really tried to just not talk about it at all.
Yeah.
And the other thing that Curable started me on was the emotional work and the writing exercises, but I ended up moving over to Nicole Sachs journal speak because I like the kind of unstructured free form approach of journal speak that kind of spoke to me more. So yeah. I ended up using that, but yeah, it certainly started with Curable.
Awesome. Great. Did you, how long was it before you started having, like, A, were you in like a daily cadence of working in the app, or was it a little bit more irregular than that? And then how long would you say before you started to like really kind of have a, you know, a good firm grasp or dent in what it was that you were feeling symptom wise?
So I think I kind of dabbled in the app, listened to all the education stuff, and then I kind of switched over to journal speak more. So then a few weeks in, I kind of really got stuck into journal speak, and I did like, you know, the 30 days journaling meditation, yeah, the way that Nicole recommends. Yep. And during that time, I noticed a lot of changing in symptoms that had previously been quite stuck. I wouldn't say it was necessarily relief. I was one of those people where it almost got worse before it got better. Yeah. So I had just like, it was almost like an exorcism. Like I had these really weird experiences of things like vertigo coming back that I hadn't had for years. Like I'd roll over in the middle of the night and the room would spin and I'd be like, oh, hey, this is familiar, but like, welcome back kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And the symptoms that I had been experiencing, the muscle pain and stuff, it took quite a long time to change. I'm not one of these people who had really fast results, which I actually think is good for people to hear that, because there are an awful lot of people who get very frustrated hearing quick recovery stories. And I'm definitely like a slow burn recovery story.
Yeah.
I would say that I noticed improvements in the first 6 months, but they were slow. And also I had like lots of symptom imperatives. So once my neck and shoulders started to feel a bit better, I got absolutely like slammed with ankle pain in both ankles, like Achilles tendonitis,
yeah. Yeah.
Which just came out of nowhere. And I knew that it was a symptom imperative and I wasn't too freaked out by it, but it was quite bad. And again, it lasted quite a long time. You know, I'd get out of bed in the morning and I could hardly walk for the first 10 minutes of the day. It was so stiff and painful. So there was a lot of stuff like that going on. So I would say that probably it took about 6 months for me to really start to feel like I was maybe about 50% of the way to better. And then it probably took me another year to get to the point where I felt like I was about 80% better, which is kind of where I am now, about 80 to 90%. There's no fear anymore, but, you know, there's still a few kind of lingering bits of my body, which I would quite like to be, you know, have less muscle tension in and move a bit better. But
why, what do you think is what do you think has had you sort of keeping the faith along the way? Like if it did take so many months to have, you know, start having like substantial change, and like, I guess what about the process or what about this approach in general has not had you racing back to a general practitioner?
I think because once I understood that emotions were part of it, mm-hmm. I could see so much evidence in my timeline. Like even looking way back, there was a time when I got the news of a really, really shocking bereavement. A friend of mine lost a child. And that day I got the worst back pain I'd ever had,
yeah,
later in the day. And so there were a few things like that. And also in my recovery story, as I was doing some of the emotional work, I would kind of notice pain come when I was in a stressful situation, and I would notice tension, yeah, come if I was having a conversation about something that was difficult. So I think that really helped. And the other thing that I think helped me keep the faith is because the science made sense. I mean, it really did make sense to me. But I also recognized that I was still in a very stressful situation. When I started doing this work, I was in a really toxic relationship. I'd separated from my ex and I'd got into a new relationship, which was really challenging and it, yeah, was not good for me. And while I was in that relationship, I think I could only get limited healing because, you know, like the, what do they call it? Like the reservoir of rage, the reservoir of stress, yeah, and all of that. Because of that relationship, it was being filled up every single day. So it was all I could do to keep scooping it out. And so I really needed to make some changes in my life so that I could actually kind of empty some of that reservoir and keep the level at a manageable level so that the symptoms started to go.
Yep. Yep. Definitely. Well, so what, you know, I'm curious, especially with some of the exercises that Curable is involved in, you talked about journal speak. Were there any sort of, if you're comfortable sharing, were there any sort of like revelations or themes or things like that that began to come to the surface or come to the forefront during this process of kind of unwinding?
I think one of the big things, there was a lot of unprocessed grief, which I almost had to kind of work backwards through. So when I came out as transgender, that meant the end of like a 20-year relationship, mm-hmm. which was obviously huge for me. And it had been a good relationship, but me being trans was a deal breaker, which is understandable. But because of that, at the time when I came out, I hadn't let myself really grieve that relationship or feel the kind of the betrayal and the abandonment, because I knew that it wasn't his fault and he was losing something as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, this is where we're getting into IFS. You know, there was a part of me that felt really betrayed and abandoned and furious with him, actually. But there were other parts of me that were much more dominant that were like, no, but you're the one who's made this choice. You know, it's not his fault. It's not okay to feel angry with him. It's not okay to feel that he's abandoned you, because actually you're abandoning him by coming out and choosing to transition. So there was a lot of stuff that I wasn't letting myself feel that came out through Journal Speak, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's take a pause right there. I hope you're really liking this interview with Phil. If you're feeling stalled in your recovery, though, I want to tell you about mind-body coach Rebecca Tolan and her Be Your Own Medicine course. In episode 157, Rebecca talked about how she overcame 13 years of chronic fatigue syndrome. She now helps clients recover from CFS, fibromyalgia, long COVID, and other stubborn symptoms. Be Your Own Medicine walks you through the knowledge, the somatic meditations, and writing exercises to reclaim your well-being. Rebecca harnesses the power of neuroplasticity and self-compassion in this gentle but powerful 8-week class. Registration is now open until September 20th, so check out her website at RebeccaTolan.com. That's RebeccaTolin.com/course to learn more. You know, I'm excited to get into the portion about the internal family systems, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I know now, if you're on any sort of an embargo where we can't say that you're going to be on the Curable podcast, please tell me and I'll make sure I delete this part. But there's going to be far more depth on the backstory, and that's supposed to be coming in the next few weeks, couple of months or something like that, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And I, as far as I know, there's no kind of like embargo on me mentioning it.
So. I can't imagine there would be. So let's kind of shift a little bit and work towards the family dynamic piece of this, because I'm excited to hear kind of what your take is on this, how it intermingles with TMS and chronic symptoms of all different kinds. And just elaborate a little bit more on what you had meant when you had reached out to me and talked about that.
Okay, so I'll kind of do my like elevator pitch internal family systems, like in a nutshell. So the first thing about internal family systems is that the name of it is really confusing, because it's not about your family on the outside. It's not about your parents, your siblings. It's about the parts of you on the inside and how they interact. So it's about the different parts of your own personality. So that's the first thing, is that the name is quite unhelpful.
Yeah.
And I believe the founder of the model has been told loads of times by marketing companies that he should change it. But he's like, no, we've been doing this for 20 years.
We're not changing it.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing, is that it's not about your family, although obviously like what goes on inside you will impact on wider systems. But the internal family system is about the different parts of you and how they relate. So in terms of the mind-body stuff, it can be really helpful to understand those typical TMS personality traits that we all know about. So you can view those as parts. So many of us have a part that is a perfectionist, and many of us have a part that is a critic, that criticizes us and, you know, beats us up when we're doing things wrong. So that is kind of like the, you know, the main overview of internal family systems, is it's this idea that we have many different parts to our personality, and that that is totally normal, that we all have that.
Yep.
But also with IFS, we have a core self that is not a part. And that bit is really important. That's a really important part of the model, because that's what we want to be able to access. We want to be able to access that core self. We want to be able to kind of operate from that place as much as we can, while recognizing that we also have these parts that are here to help us even when it might seem like they're not helping. They might seem like they're behaving in ways that are kind of harmful or extreme, but all of the parts in our system have good intentions for us. They're all trying to like protect us or keep us safe in some way. So that's kind of the overview. And of those parts, there are kind of, well, there are three categories, but in its simplest form, there are two categories of parts. So there are parts that have a protective role. Those parts have a function in your system. So again, our perfectionist and our critic would be examples of that. Those parts are doing something. They are working somehow to sort of protect us, help us in the way that we show up in the world. And then there are other parts which don't have a protective role, but parts which just carry burdens, or parts which are wounded. And so those are parts we might often think of as like inner child parts. And those are the parts that often have these really strong emotions that we're keeping shut down. The protector parts, like the critic or the perfectionist, or parts that, you know, won't let us show emotion, are kind of keeping those parts safe, but they're also keeping those parts shut down so that they don't overwhelm us. So you can kind of see how it fits quite well with the TMS stuff. But the really important part is that all of those protectors have good intentions. And when we can get to know them and understand them and understand like the dynamics and how they interact, that can be a really helpful way of exploring what's going on. So again, like another really good example of how this can be helpful in terms of things like journaling is when you've got like a conflict. So if there's something that you're feeling really conflicted about, so just
and to be clear, are you talking about like feeling conflicted about something happening currently, or just it could be anything in the past or anything currently?
It could be either. Yeah, it could be things in the past, it could be things that are going on now, and it can be even just, you know, little stuff day to day. Like, you know, most of us can probably resonate with having a part that maybe wants us to go and do some exercise, and then another part that's like, no, I want to lie on the sofa and just eat.
Oh, so it could really be a con. It doesn't have to be something that's an earth shattering, you know, argument with this, you know, with somebody that's close to you. It could be something as simple as that.
Yeah, it can be the simple day to day stuff, because all the different parts we have, like, some of them are like just managing us. They're just like making us do the stuff that we need to do. Yep. And then there are other parts that are like, no, you need to relax because that's good for you too. And it's just that constant little internal, almost like the conversations that you have in your head where you kind of like, oh, I ought to do that. Oh, no, but I don't want to.
Yep.
Those are parts. That's the way that parts are showing up in our system.
Yep.
But from a mind-body perspective, the other thing to know is that parts can use pain, and some parts that will be part of their function. So when people have got pain and other chronic symptoms, that can be driven by parts that are somehow using those symptoms as a way of protecting us. So again, like one example of that would be, you might get a part that creates pain to stop you doing something that it thinks is bad for you. So for example, if your job is really stressful and you've got a manager who's really awful, then you might have a part that will create pain to keep you off work because it's keeping you safe, it's keeping you at home. And if you've got a fear of exercise causing injury, then you'll have parts that will exacerbate that kind of like muscle pain to stop you doing the thing that they think is bad for you.
But with, and Schumacher really talks about this, but a neural circuit issue, like almost like in the example of the exercise that you just gave, it could be sending you danger signals or pain or whatever to discontinue. However, there may not be any sort of structural damage or structural issue that's going on at all. And so there's different methods involved to be able to start exposing yourself to that. But in that example, with what it is that you're talking about, how would you go about doing that?
So with IFS, the way that we would work with parts, it's all about getting to know them and finding out like why they're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, rather than just ignoring them or trying to sort of banish them from the system, it's all about understanding their motives, because once you understand them and kind of learn to kind of cooperate with them and listen to them, then they will eventually relax and they won't have to work so hard. And there's also a lot about working with the vulnerable parts that the the other parts are protecting. And when you get to those ones and do some kind of like really healing work with childhood wounds and all of that stuff, then the protectors don't have to work so hard. So in the example of exercise, I mean, one of the things for me that I've had to work through around exercise is that I had parts that were using exercise in the past as a way of controlling my weight and my physical appearance. And so I had parts that would use exercise very much almost as like a punishment and almost like as you have to do it, yeah, because, you know, you have to do it because you ate that earlier on, so now you need to go for a run.
Yep.
And then I had other parts that obviously must have reacted to that. And I think some of my parts that created pain were probably the ones that were like, you know, we just want to be able to like eat chocolate and enjoy it and not have to go for a 5 mile run.
Yeah.
And so that was that kind of conflict in my system. And so being able to understand why the parts that were creating pain, they were kind of protecting almost this belief of like, underneath all of that, there was that I'm not good enough unless I look a certain way. I'm not good enough unless I can run this far and this fast. And I was putting so much pressure on myself. And once I could kind of get to the feelings of not being good enough, get to those, you know, those really underlying, difficult, painful stuff that we work through in journaling, then those parts that were creating pain didn't need to work so hard, because basically I'd kind of, you know, I'd been able to heal some of that and recognize that I do have worth and that, you know, how, what my body looks like isn't so important.
Well, first of all, you stole my thunder, because I was about to ask you the example of like the exercise thing. Cause it sounds like you and I have sort of a similar background in that regard. Like I was, as a teenager, and even younger than that, I was very overweight. And so, I did eventually find exercise and working out and things like that as a sort of a vessel to be able to stop the bullying, right? And so I'd had a thought recently, because I've had a couple of relapses or whatever where suddenly I just get this like sticking a hot bat into my low back while I'm lifting. And I had a thought recently about, man, I wonder if, you know, I do enjoy lifting, I do enjoy exercise and all that kind of stuff, but is there a part of me, which it sounds like what you're saying, is there a part of me that the connection in a lot of ways to training and lifting and working out is still sort of like almost like embedded in my software, basically, is a vehicle to really get away from tough times or challenging times or bullying mm-hmm. times, or when I feel like maybe I'm being wronged in some way, because that's how I would have felt as a teenager. It was the way to cope, and it was a way to get away from that. And sounds like that's a lot of what you're talking about.
Yeah. So I would guess that you would have a part that has very much been trying to protect you by, you know, keeping you really fit and focused on exercise and all the stuff that you do. And like, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy it at the same time,
yeah,
but there might well be a part in your system that very much sees it as like necessary,
yeah,
like essential for you, for your yeah. safety and for your self-esteem. And of course, then there may be other parts that maybe sometimes want a break or don't want to have to work so hard.
Yeah.
So it could be, you know, that would be the sort of thing that could be worth exploring.
Yeah. And I've had that thought too. There's been, and a couple of them I can really remember pretty well. I remember, this was several years ago. This was probably almost 10 years ago, but I'd been training really, really hard in CrossFit for a couple of years. And then just kind of had this, I don't know, it was weird. It was like a month and a half, 2 months, something like that, where I like just, I don't know, I just like lost all the motivation, lost, like I still was going, but I didn't really want to go. And then coincidentally, I was still continuing to go. I had some, once that feeling of I don't want to go, but I'm going to go went away, I started having, as I look back, symptom imperatives of some kind. Like a dairy allergy popped up at that particular point in time. And so, okay, I'm sort of over this lull that I'm feeling about training in general, and now I have this other thing that I can focus on. And that sounds kind of similar to what you're talking about. I think that's really interesting. I haven't given much thought to what you're discussing specifically is, because it almost sounds like it's like a symptom of, like it's like a TMS symptom. Like, for instance, like my back pain might be somebody else's sort of, you know, lost passion for something that they may have previously really enjoyed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, everything we do is kind of motivated by these different parts on the inside, and some of them are involved in, yeah, in using behaviors, and some of them were involved in creating symptoms. It's like, but they all have a purpose. So I guess I'd be curious about the part of you that was not interested, that lost interest. Like,
yeah,
that would sound like that was another part that kind of lost interest. But then, as you say, when that one then that went away and you started to have the motivation again,
yeah,
something else popped up. Which, yeah, is often very much how it goes. They kind of hand the baton to something else.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so you do, so you're Serpa trained, and Georgie is still on my, she's probably, I don't know, she's sort of like the queen to me, where I have not been able to get an interview scheduled with her. We sort of have done the bouncing around the calendars thing for, God, almost 5 years now at this point. But talk about how did you, because I know that like in the United States, it's not that Serpa is not in the forefront, but it's a UK-based entity. So talk a little bit about Serpa and your experience in terms of going through the training for that and becoming certified and what it is that you do now.
Yeah, so Serpa's great. I mean, as you say, they're a UK-based organization, but they do train people internationally. There are Serpa practitioners all over the world, but kind of concentrated in the UK. And Serpa was set up by, as you know, Georgie Oldfield, and she trained with Dr. Sarno originally. She's a physical therapist, physio, who became interested in the mind-body approach and who went to Dr. Sarno and worked with him for a while. And then she came back and set up this training in the UK for people who wanted to work with that modality. And a lot of the people who do the Serpa training are body workers. So there are a lot of physios and chiropractors, but they also train coaches and therapists, psychotherapists and counselors. So, yeah, so I got into it through, I was life coaching, and then I did the Serpa training because I wanted to be able to help people with chronic pain. And then I got into the internal family systems and was lucky enough to manage to get a place on a training for that, because it's really, really hard to get into, actually. So that was kind of the route that I took. And I'm training to be a counselor at the moment. I'm in like my final year now training to be a counselor psychotherapist. So eventually that's how I'll be working. But it probably won't change really what I'm doing that much, because I'm mainly using internal family systems with clients these days. And that won't really look very different when I've got the counseling qualification to how it looks now.
Yeah. You're actively working with clients now, and I imagine they're all over the world, right?
Yeah, more of them are in the UK because a lot of them come through Serpa, but I do work with some people who are over the pond as well. So yeah, kind of a bit of a variety.
And I know you're an IFS coach, but is there certain, like, how do you get paired with certain clients, or is there a certain profile or a certain type of person or a certain type of story, maybe is a little bit more relevant, a certain type of story where they connect with you? Like, you hear, I don't know if you get some sort of a bio or something like that from somebody beforehand, but where you say, yes, that particular scenario, I would be very helpful there for that person.
I mean, I guess I'll usually have an initial appointment with anyone who gets in touch with me, but certainly most of the people who are coming to me through Serpa, you know, everyone is unique, but everybody who has chronic pain, there are some commonalities. So I'm always open to meeting people who've got those kind of issues. And I don't use IFS with everybody. It depends on the client, because some people are not so open to it. But with the people that I have been using IFS with, it's been really helpful for starting to unravel some of that internal conflict that's going on. Actually, one of the things that I wanted to say a little bit more about IFS, if that's okay.
Yeah, please do.
Because I've been kind of explaining how the model works and like how we can use that to understand our systems.
Yep.
But when you actually do IFS with a practitioner, the process itself is quite different to a lot of other types of therapy. So it's not like talk therapy. In IFS, we don't just talk about the parts. We actually help. I actually help the client to connect with a part, like from them, the self, the part of the person who isn't a part. And I kind of facilitate an internal conversation. So that it's almost a bit like a guided meditation that I'm using in a session with somebody. So I will ask them to kind of close their eyes and turn inside and tune into the body. So it's very somatic, which is one of the reasons it works so well for people with chronic pain.
Yeah.
It's very much, you talk about the Stark reactor, like that tracking.
Yep.
Yeah.
You've been listening a long time. I haven't talked about that specifically in a while. So
I've listened to nearly all of them. Yeah, so it's very much, IFS is very much like that kind of somatic tracking, turning inwards, really tuning in and noticing what's going on. And often when clients focus on a part and, like, you know, they talk about it, they talk about the part they want to focus on. And then when I invite them to close their eyes and focus on it and see if they can find it in or around their body, very often parts are showing up in the body. So people will say, oh, I can feel it. It's like a tightness in my chest, or it feels like a band around my head, or it feels like a tingling in my hands. So parts very much start to show up in that somatic way. And they may or may not be associated with emotions immediately, but it's just something about helping people to locate them in the body is a really important part of the work. And some people will be very visual. So some people will really get an image of a part, and it might look like a younger version of them, but it might also look like something completely different. Like parts can show up as like shapes or colors or blobs or animals or anything. So there's a lot of kind of imagination, internal imagination that's used with internal family systems. And as the person focuses on the part, then I'll be asking them, you know, what do you notice about it? Does the part know that you're there, like paying attention to it? It sounds quite weird at first, but it works. That's the thing about it. It sounds really strange, but it really works. And it's amazing what people find out once they get into this kind of state of just noticing, paying attention. And they will ask, I will ask, tell them to ask the part questions. So like, ask the part, how is it trying to help you? Ask it about the job that it has in your system. You know, when does it show up? What does it do? What is the part afraid would happen if it didn't do this thing that it does? Whatever it is that makes you do. Like eat, not eat, go to the gym, lie on the couch under a blanket. You know, what is this part doing? Or if this part's creating migraine symptoms, you know, what is the part afraid would happen if it didn't give you a migraine?
Yeah. Do you find that one challenge, especially after that Stark Reactor episode dropped, like the one where I just talked about that, one of the challenges that people would describe to me was almost like being able to hold their attention or stay focused, because it is kind of intense, maybe isn't the right word, but it does take all of your absolute undivided attention to do what you're describing. Do you find that clients and people that you work with have that challenge, particularly in the beginning when you start doing this, like being able to, I mean, is this a 20 minute exercise? Is this a 40 minute exercise? Like what, or is it even less than that? And maybe you're growing over time.
Well, with IFS, it can be any length, but typically it will often be most of the session. And I work in 50 minute sessions and sometimes 75 minute sessions.
Wow. Okay.
And so sometimes somebody will be, they'll have their eyes closed and they will be working on the inside for an hour or more.
Yeah.
But during that time, they will probably end up encountering multiple parts, because what happens is as you start to focus on one part and you start to get to know it a little bit, then what happens is the other parts then usually interrupt. So for example, if a client is focusing on like an inner critic part and they're starting to get a feel for it and they're starting to notice it, then at some point you can almost guarantee that another part is going to show up that really hates that inner critic,
yeah,
or that's really scared of the inner critic, and that part will kind of want to take the client away from it. And so this is why it's called internal family systems, because it's a bit like family therapy but on the inside, where the client, their self, is almost taking on the role of mediator with the support of me, the coach or therapist, and they will be kind of trying to get these parts to let each other speak and to take turns and to give each other space. Because if all the different parts of you are kind of shouting at once, then you can't hear any of them. And so there's often this kind of negotiation of like, okay, so there's this part that's an inner critic, and there's a part that's really scared of the inner critic and that wants it to go away. So is the part that's afraid of the critic willing to wait while we get to know the critic a bit better, so we can see if we can help it to maybe chill out a bit?
Yeah.
And if the part that's afraid isn't willing, then we can see if the part that's afraid would go and wait, like get the client to say, you know, in their imagination, like, will it go and wait in a safe place? Will it go to a waiting room? Can it put up a screen? I've had clients have parts, you know, want to put up kind of like riot shields between afraid parts and like angry or scary parts. And so this is all kind of happening on the inside. And if the part isn't willing to do that, then sometimes you have to switch and focus on that one instead.
Yeah.
But it's this very kind of like really deep internal process that is like very much like meditation. And I think that people don't usually have too much trouble. Either people are just resistant to doing it at all, in which case maybe it's not the right modality for them. But most people, when they try it, it always amazes me. I always expect it to be harder, but most people are able to kind of drop into it relatively easily. I think with a facilitator, I think where it is difficult is it can be hard to do IFS on your own, but that's not to say that it's impossible. And it can still be a useful exercise.
Yeah.
But it can sometimes be easier with like a guided version. And there are some guided IFS meditations on Insight Timer and on YouTube, if people want to look those up. That can be helpful, because having that guidance can be easier than just that totally like silent meditation or somatic tracking.
Yeah. Phil, if they want to learn more about you, or this is resonating with somebody, do you have a website or a place where people can go to learn a little bit more?
Yeah, so my website is phildelahaye.com, which is phildelahaye. And I'm on Instagram and I've got a Facebook page, and those are both Phil Delahaye Coaching.
Awesome. And I'll link those in the show notes. So if you weren't feverishly taking notes, as Phil said that, they'll be in the notes section. Hey, thanks so much for joining. This was really fascinating. It was a totally new topic to the podcast, or seemingly a new topic to the podcast. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, you're really welcome. Thanks for the opportunity. And thanks for your podcast, because it's been super helpful in my recovery.
Yeah, I appreciate that. All right. All right. Well, take care.
Right. You too.
Bye.